So Wally, this wouldn't even be a scenario, except for the fact that it actually happened to you and it got caught on camera from that paraglider pilot. And in fact, we'll have a link to a video with an interview with you and the fleet biplane pilot. We'll put that in the hangar. And you say that you've changed the way you do things based on this very unlikely situation. And you probably haven't even run into the situation again since then. But have you talked with other pilots? Is this something that you would advocate other people think about? Or is it just so unlikely it's like, yeah, I might do it differently, but it's not worth it?
No, you bet I talk about it with other pilots, Jeff. Prior to this incident, I felt a nice calm wind, clear morning was a very relaxed operation, and this was a fun time to go flying. We all enjoy flying on those days. And what I realized as a result of this incident that there's a lot of danger in a calm wind because people can be going any which direction. If we have a 10-knot wind, we're all going in the same direction. So I'm trying to make that point with almost everybody I fly with and everybody I see now that simply because the wind is calm means we need to elevate our caution rather than lower it.
So this discussion is really kind of changing my perspective because as I read through this, I thought, we're just overthinking this, man. Come on. You've been down there for 15 minutes. Your run-up went well. Call it and take off. But now that I'm sitting here listening to Wally, it's causing me to pause and think maybe I'm one of those guys that have been a little too cavalier on a calm wind day.
I'm curious around the table, is there anyone here who is like, you know, that's so unlikely. Forget it. I'm just freaking taking off.
Well, I have a question for Wally before I answer that one. How much virtue signaling should be going on a check ride? Because it's a little bit of a mind game when you've got the applicant in the left seat and he's trying to make good aeronautical decisions, but he's also trying to second guess what the examiner is expecting. So in this scenario, either before or after your experience, if he had gone ahead and taken off, would that have been an issue for you as an examiner?
Well, we did, in fact, take off. So and I didn't see that as a bad issue at all. He chose to use runway 6, and that was a logical decision. It wasn't a bad decision. And we took off, and until at the completion of the flight did we realize that we'd had this near collision.
What if there had been a confrontation after takeoff and he sidestepped to avoid it? Would that have been an issue on the examination?
No, not necessarily, if he'd handled it properly.
But now, building on Paul's, because I think there was something inherent in there, if you were in this situation with another applicant next week, runway 6, calm winds, and he departed runway 6, would you bring it up? Would you feel uncomfortable? Would you say anything?
In this scenario, I'm not going to depart runway 6 anymore. I'm going to depart runway 24 because you can see the entire airport from 24. You can't see the end of the runway, but you can see airplanes taxiing.
Would you pink slip an applicant for doing it?
I wouldn't pink slip him, but I'd override his decision. I sure would.
And on the subject of overthinking check rods, this is the taxiing to runway 24 and taking off 24 is actually kind of brilliant because you know you're going to get a rejected takeoff on the first takeoff from a multi-engine check rod, or at least the chances are good. So you're actually going to reject that takeoff. Now you're at runway 6 and you'll be able to take off in the direction you wanted to take off anyway, right?
Well, I'm based at a non-controlled airport, and I can tell you on an early morning on a weekend in calm wind, people are taking off from any which runway. And, hey, this one's closer to my hangar. This one goes in the direction that I want to go. And even when pattern operations have a 10 or 15-knot wind and they're all going in the same direction, the wind often changes at our airport because it's near the ocean. But people stay on that runway, which is the wrong runway. So I'll get out there and say, hey, guys, why don't we switch to the other runway because it's actually the one into the wind. But people don't listen. They don't do it. And I think the fact is people are taking off opposite directions on uncontrolled airports a lot more than you might think.
I agree, Michael. It happens all the time at lots of airports. And I think, you know, I was just in the mood that, or the mode that I didn't recognize the consequences of this mid-air collision. I mean, we all know it, but to think that it was real was just the risk was so low. But in fact, when it happens, it's a catastrophe.
So what's the answer? Should uncontrolled fields have a calm wind runway designated?
Some do. You know, we see that in some places. Somerville Airport does not. I don't know. I think the answer is to be on the CTAF and be proactive about listening and talking.
I know this solution doesn't necessarily work for an airport like Plymouth, Michael's Airport, where there's multiple runways. But there's a runway out in the San Juans outside of Seattle called Blakely Island, and there's a huge hump in it. You can't see the other side of the runway at all. And the operation at that runway is to do your run-up in the middle. So you actually taxi to sort of the middle of the runway on the taxiway. So that you can see, because you can see both sides of the runway from the middle. And in that case, you do your run-up, and then you can kind of call and decide which end of the runway you're going to take off from.
Well, I think it's a great idea, and what Ivy described is fantastic. And also, if the runway has a big crown in the middle, you oftentimes can't hear the person on the other end of the runway because of line of sight with the radio, so you can't hear them.
Yeah, well, this brings to mind the midpoint taxiway we do at my home airport, and that's probably what I do here in a situation where I was concerned about this mix because, you know, you've got non-radio airplanes, you've got powered parachutes, which, as far as I'm concerned, are an unnatural act, and you've got things that kind of don't mix well in the pattern. But the other issue is at my airport we have cross runways, and we coordinate cross runways if you want to do crosswind takeoffs on from the active runway, you can do that. These things can be done. They can be coordinated on the CTAF. They can be coordinated visually and be done safely. So that's kind of the same thing that's going on here. And as far as the probability of an encounter on the runway, I think, while you're right to begin with, it's fairly low, and I'm not sure that I would do the taxi on a regular basis unless I was suspecting that this traffic mix was there or had some evidence of it.
I think the other issue, too, is it doesn't matter whether or not you're on a check ride. As somebody who's given and taken a lot of check rides, you don't ever want to do anything dumb, different, or dangerous on a check ride. So do the same thing you would do regardless of whether the examiner was there. So just take that out of the equation.
This brings me back to my original question here to everyone at the table, though. So you are at the end of runway 6, you did take a long time for whatever reason. And now you go, am I going to taxi all the way back? As Wally's story makes me think about, and I never thought about beforehand, or come on, I'm just going to take off. Is everyone here going to taxi back, or are some of you going to take off?
I mean, I would love to be virtuous enough to say that I would definitely taxi back, but it's like, I'm not that person. It's like, if it's, you know, and I just think of the real world in which it's hot, engines are getting warm, my passenger's getting uncomfortable, let's get this going already. You know, I mean, this scenario brings up an excellent point, and it's one I frankly had not considered. But until you're beak to beak with that fleet biplane that you didn't anticipate, this isn't real.
Well, I would take off too, but if I was with Dave, I'd say, Dave, you really ought to taxi back.
Well, that's really honest. I appreciate the honesty there in that. Well, you know, this kind of brings in like a larger issue of doing things non-standard because you're trying to be safe. And is that really safe? And what comes to mind for me, I had people bring me an article that I think was from AOPA about sidestepping on takeoff slightly to the right or the left so that you could turn back. And people ask me, well, what do you think about this? And I'm like, man, I was like, you're now doing something non-standard to hedge against an incredibly unlikely event, whereas you're now making a non-standard event every single time that people aren't anticipating. Like, what's the balance there? I didn't like that, but I'm curious about other people. Other people nodded their head about that article. Is it worth investigating these like non-standard events? Like, so I'm going to deviate slightly on takeoff every single time, just in case I need to turn back, or in the case of the biplane, just in case there's somebody else there. Any thoughts on that?
I think I was nodding because I remembered the article. I didn't really see anything. I don't fault the author on that one. It's like, I thought it was an interesting idea for, you know, facilitating a turn back and, you know, it didn't seem like it was all that radical to me, because it's only, you're only talking about a 5 to 10 degree heading change. So, you know, a lot of pilots are sloppy enough that you wouldn't notice that anyway. It's in the, within the margin of error.
And in my world, you know, you come from airplanes like pit specials. When the engine quits, it's going to come down fast. So there's a whole school of thought that you depart, make a 30-degree turn either way, and climb. In case you have an engine failure, you can make it back to the runway.
I'm just 100% out on the low-level turn back. Mm-hmm. I guess that's all I have to say. Like, I just feel like that's how people die. And I think the chances of a normal pilot becoming super pilot with an emergency on takeoff and then making it back to the airport, 180-degree turn, no way.
But even putting aside the, you know, turn back or not argument, and I'm basically with you on that, most of the time your engine isn't going to fail. Most of the time you are going to go in a 30-degree turn off the departure end of the runway. If somebody starts thinking about this and they don't start thinking about the fact that helicopters are using the backwards pattern or gliders are using the opposite pattern, or if they went to the right and they're not thinking about those powered parachutes, that's where they're coming in and landing is close to the taxiway. You know, other people are operating based on assumptions about your behavior.
Yeah, but you're getting ever more rarefied here. I mean, at some point, you've got to get in the airplane, push the throttle, pull the stick, and fly.
And there's a lot to be said about predictability, right? When we're all sharing the same runways and the same airspace, I mean, flying around to a lot of GA events, I'm amazed at how safely we do it. And we do it because people are predictable. And that's really important.
I talk a lot with customers and students about situational awareness. And they talk about situational awareness in an airplane, but I talk about it from the time I leave my house. What's the weather? What are the winds? When I come to the airport, when I come around the airport road, I start to look up and see which way the airplanes are taking off. So if I want to know which way the active is, I'm like, hey, which way are they going? When I push my airplane out of the hangar, I'm looking, I'm trying to be situationally aware of, are there helicopters? Are there corporate jets going? Because I know they're going to use the longer runway. All of those things. So when you talk about, hey, non-standard helicopters and everything else, I'm not a super pilot, but I try to be a super pilot. So I get in my airplane, put my headset on, taxi to the end, knowing the situation around me and who's flying and who's not and where they are.
A pitch departure is a non-standard event to begin with. He gets a pass.
Thank you.
Fair enough.
With regard to letting the airplane drift off to the side 30 degrees or whatever, it's a non-standard procedure. And I think we're hypocritical if we are going to be teachers and instructors. We need to teach what's in the AIM, and the AIM says we're track straight out. Maybe in some specific cases, it's a good habit. Turned out in this case, it saved a mid-air collision, so certainly was a good habit. But you can create you can invent a lot of non-standard procedures, which can cause a lot more trouble than they can do good.
Right. I think that's a really fair point. Is, you know, there's only so much you can do to protect against, you know, essentially getting struck by lightning, right? Whether that's someone was departing the other way, or whether there's an airport where I depart from a lot, where if you're departing runway 35, you can't see runway 4 because there's literally a hill between the two of you. And everyone on local procedures either looks to their left or looks to their right, depending on looking for the airplane coming out the other runway. But we just know that. You know, there's only so much you can do to hedge against that, especially if it's a place that you haven't been before, which, you know, we often do. So I appreciate you bringing this up. Well, I appreciate, like, you bringing it to our attention, saying, hey, this happened, because it does inject that, like, okay, there's yet another what if for me to consider before I push those throttles forward and, you know, commit myself to this act of aviation.